And we're your hosts. I'm Diane Bortoletto.
And I'm Monique Chicardo.
Let's do it.
Hello, hello, and welcome to And Away We Go F1 podcast, a Formula One podcast about Formula One, of course, travel, food, and lifestyle. My name's Diane Bortoletto, and I'm your pre-Drive to Survive Formula One fan, and today I'm in a very hot Perth in Western Australia.
And I'm Monique Chicardo, your post-Drive to Survive fan, and I'm currently at home in a very dark Norway.
And today we're joined by photographer Sabine Albers. I've known Sabine for about, I don't know, a dozen years or so. Sabine is a visual storyteller, and she was assigned recently to photograph the prestigious VIP hospitality venues at the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix. So very warm welcome to Sabine. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, great. Thanks for having me on there.
So Sabine, before you got engaged to photograph the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix, were you a Formula One fan, and how did you get into the sport?
I do love Formula One. I've been watching nearly every race if I can. I think we connected ages ago on the Australasian Safari.
That's right. We worked together on that one, which is like a mini Dakar through Western Australia's outback. I mean, the tagline was seven tough days. So you can imagine the kind of conditions that the competitors had. And yes, I remember you coming in after a long day photographing that event, covered in dust and dirt and carrying all this heavy equipment after being out on the stages all day.
So yeah, I think I've just got a big love, and I've got the opportunity to actually do something with it, with events and people that are having a passion for things. And it just draws me in, and my cameras, and it just has so much energy to share and stories to share. So that's why I love Formula One, just to watch it. And obviously when I got the assignment, it was just too good to be true, going, would you like to come along and photograph all the VIP and hospitality and all the food? Because I'm also a big foodie. I'm like, let me think about it. Yes.
When do I sign up?
Dream job. How did photographing the VIP food Formula One side of things compare to dusty hot?
I mean, I've done both. I've done a lot of food photography. I'm quite eclectic with the kind of work I do. It's all involved with people's passion. So I love working with chefs because they've got a huge passion. They're not always the easiest to work with, but that's what I love, because they've got an opinion, they've got a vision. And that's the same. It's the same with the Australasian Safari or the F1 or the Australian Open, where I worked as well, and other big events. People like you guys and me, and then all the teams, everyone comes together, and it's just such a energy. And that's what makes me go. That's what makes me see the stories and notice all the things. So it doesn't really matter if you're in the outback in the dust or if you're in a VIP area. It doesn't mean one is harder than the other, because they're both have got their challenges.
I could imagine. And I guess it's such a difference from shooting in a studio, for example, to shooting at an event. There's a whole other level of pressure, a whole other level of unexpectedness, and a whole other level of, I guess, preparedness that you have to have for being unprepared. You know, you just don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah, you just have to be prepared to not be prepared. When I started out as a photographer, I did a lot of adventure races around the world. So I've learned the hard way to coming out of art school. I had no idea what accreditation was or how an event works or how all these things work. So I just threw myself in it. And like, I was asked by a client, Discovery Channel, to follow the team that they were working on. So adventure challenges are for a 40 member events over 500 kilometers, no dark zones. It's 24/7. It goes through the whole of Argentina, through the mountains, to the oceans and everything else. So there I learned to always be ready. Like, the only thing you can be ready with is your gear and yourself. And then you just move forward. And from that, starting as my first little passion, I've learned so much. And even on commercial jobs in the studio or in a restaurant or anywhere else, I use that, because you don't need to go back or forget something or do something. You're ready to photograph and film thing. And that's where you get the images. That's when people start to relax around you. That's when you allow things to happen. Those things, you can plan it, but it never turns out that way. So you can make a plan in your head, but then you just let it all go. Yeah. And be reactive, really.
And often the most beauty is in that in those unprepared moments, that's when you get the real gold,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, yeah. You never finish, you never stop.
With events, you don't get a second take. The action's happening and you just have to be there and be ready and try to capture all those moments and those emotions and reactions and yeah. And the other things. So what was the brief for Abu Dhabi?
The brief was from the airline Etihad. So they're the main sponsor of the event for people mm-hmm. that don't know, or one of the main sponsors. They've got many. And they wanted to really focus outside of the actual race of the experience of the VIPs and people coming in, that what it is like when you come to the event and you're in the VIP areas and what is happening there. So that basically, the brief was very big and impossible. But as always, it's like you start going, yeah, that's great. Knowing that you come in, the events are starting to build, everyone's racing, it's not never ready. I was there 2 days before to do recce's and talk to the chef. The chefs weren't ready, didn't want to talk to anyone, let alone me. And then we're still painting areas and the tables are coming in and everyone's stressed out of their head. So all I could do is really try to navigate and work out physically where all the VIP events were. There's a lot of hospitality. There are about 9 or 10 high-end hospitality venues, and they're all attached to very well-known restaurants like Nobu and Opa and all these. Some of them I've never heard of before. So yeah, you go around and work out where it is, how long is it going to take me to get there? Because it's a big track and you cannot go just, you know, cross the track. You have to get around and no one knows anything, and it's very chaotic. So that's how you start. So the brief was photographing the experience, people enjoying themselves, the beautiful food, the chef, food prep, cooking and serving it out. And there was entertainment. There were, like, for the Greek opa, it was entertainment and plate throwing and DJs. And it was just one big party everywhere.
Having seen inside all those hospitality tents, would you recommend, if people had the money to splurge and treat themselves? Yeah. Would you recommend, you know, they splurge if they had the opportunity and the money to do so?
Yes. Why not? And it's ridiculously expensive though, but it is amazing. The food and the access that you have, because obviously, and they weren't tents. They were full on buildings and restaurants and like double layered balconies.
Wow.
That's amazing. Unlimited champagne cocktail.
Sold.
Yeah. Even like I was one of the ladies that gave me a quick tour, which was really sweet before it all started. And like, you do any cocktails? And she's like, well, people just want champagne, so we don't really bother. We've got them, but people just champagne.
Yeah. Wow. And why not? Why wouldn't you? Were there any people of any kind of note in any of these high-end venues, either well-known people or celebrities, or did they get any Formula One personalities in to do talks to the guests, that kind of thing?
No, I think that's the paddock. Yeah. That's where that happens. I was not allowed in there. So they have got their own people. So as far as I knew, but I'm in Abu Dhabi, it would be different if I would be in, say, in the Netherlands. That would be a very different setup. I mean, Abu Dhabi is the richest, the most posh, the most crazy event, I think, out of all of them. The money, I don't know, I haven't, maybe Vegas, but, you know, it's such, there's so much money in there. It's ridiculous.
The money in the Middle East.
Yeah, exactly. It's a very big contradiction with the local culture and all the expats. Because it's all expats that's there and a few locals.
So how did you manage to meet the brief then? How many cameras were you carrying around, and how many venues did you have to go to on Friday, Saturday, Sunday?
Well, you do stress out like crazy because you get frustrated. The chefs, they're really so busy in those kitchens. And I love the kitchens, but there's so many people working everywhere. You work with hot grills and so much stuff, and then I come in and they don't know me, so they get a little bit scared or frustrated, or they just don't even see me, which is fine. I can manage myself in the kitchen. It's the same with any like one event. You just go with it and you're just ready to look for that one image that you want. I know how to read people, so I know if I would get a moment, or if that person's so stressed out of their heads that they can't give me a moment. But most people were beautiful and amazing, and the food just kept coming. They just prepare all these dishes for me that I had to photograph in situ in the venues, potentially most difficult with the racetrack in the background as well.
Oh, wow. Oh, gosh. Oh, what a brief. I know, trying to get that composition right.
Yeah. And then this challenge was that the time is there on the practice rounds and the qualifier. But when the race is on, there is no time for that. So I had to photograph that before everything started. But then you're looking at empty stands, which they don't like because it's not full on those days. Race day is. So all these, you have to just think creatively. And then you have to just reassure yourself. And the team leader, because I was part of a group of 9 photographers, which is also amazing. Yeah, there was half of them were on the actual race track. So there's so much happening, as you know, with track walks and paddock walks and celebrities and these people doing, like, Brad Pitt was around because of the film. They did a lot of filming during the race as well, the crowd for that movie. So there's so much happening. And they want everything photographed.
I imagine hitting the brief, just touching on how you were saying they want the racetrack behind the food and sometimes the stands are empty, which they definitely are. Practice, you can be there all weekend and have absolutely nobody sitting behind you. Come the race, it is packed. So I completely understand that, but I imagine how hard it must be as a photographer getting that brief from non-photographers and trying to fulfill their wishes in a situation where you cannot control so many of the variables. You can't control how much crowd is in the stand.
Yeah.
You can't control, you know, the lighting on the track.
Yeah. And that again is what I've learned from doing all these other crazy things when I first started out, is that you know that's going to happen. And it's actually, in the end, it's managing your own energy and get your safety shots. So you tell stories, and that's something that you can only show after the edit, is that you photograph the beautiful food, you combine that shot with a shot of a full stadium crowd or someone having the food on another day, the same dish. So you kind of, that's where the storytelling comes in, and otherwise it's AI coming in and trying to put those two together.
Yeah.
Which is not.
Yeah, no, thank you.
Work.
No.
As a bunch of creatives, our general consensus on that was a nah.
Yeah, exactly.
And Australian, yeah, nah.
Yeah, nah.
Absolutely. But as a fan, Sabine, so you're there, you've got a job, you've got a complicated brief to fulfill, but you're at a Grand Prix and the cars are whizzing by. You watch most of the races on TV. God, it would have been so tempting just to put the camera down for a few minutes and watch. Were you able to watch any of the race?
No, especially
what a tragedy.
So the main guy, I'll call him George, but his name is Jorge. He's from Argentina. He's an amazing, amazing man and very funny as well. And the way he translated his brief to us was more in going. Last year, he said, I got in a lot of trouble because all the photographers were loving the race and everyone was going to the racetrack and photographing the race. And then he didn't have the photos that he needed. So you're very much working in a team concept. You're going, I want to help him. And we're all, by the way, making 17-hour days. So you have to really preserve your energy as well. And you're there to work and give them those shots. So that's what I take on as the challenge. It was hard because I could hear the race. But no, as a photographer, you can only focus on one thing at the time. And you know that. And if I go spread myself thin, I'm going to miss the shot, because in the brief was also the reactions of the crowd. Which is hard because you're standing with your back towards the track. There's TVs, there's audio blaring, it's packed. You don't have any space to really move away from people to get a nice wide shot. But I was lucky, but I was also ready because I did not look at the track. I didn't think about the food. I was just focusing on the group of people on the stairs looking at it. And just before the turn where we were, there was a crash. So, and most of when things happen, there's, not technical, but there's seconds of delay and stuff. But I framed my shot. I wait. Nothing might happen because I don't know if anything happens. But, you know, the likelihood of at the start something to happen is quite big. And that's why I got that only one shot of a reaction, because I don't think much else happened that was of such a reaction, because everyone's excited, standing there with their champagne, you know, and everyone's packed. And that doesn't last the whole race.
Well, as an F1 fan, you would know that turn one of any track, lap one, turn one, the most likely place of this kind of action happening. So
we sat on the straight in Qatar this year and so we could look up the straight, and we just missed that very first turn. The cars kind of disappeared a little bit, but you could generally see a little bit of dust or something come up if someone had gone off or if there'd been a crash. And
yeah.
Just thinking about those reactions that you're talking about, I get overanimated when I watch the races on the couch. I'm Italian.
Yeah.
Cannot help it. But at the race, it's this whole other level of just energy and excitement. And
yeah.
People are like turning to their seatmates, screaming at their seatmates and laughing. So capturing that moment, it must, for you as well, it must feel so good to feel that energy and to get that on camera. And sure, they're not the most flattering shot people because you're generally pulling a really ugly face, but that's what you want.
Yeah, and all the rest, you do that later with nice glasses and light going through the glasses. And there's a few shots that, you know, people dress up. And because I was in a VIP, it would be Gucci or Armani, Ferrari fit out. And you know, and they're enjoying a glass of champagne. And that's those shots. You put those in between all the other shots and the food. I think what I understand from the debrief that the client was happy. It was very stressful. It was very stressful for working with the client. But again, that's what you learn early on. And that was amazing of the team. You just don't, you're not going to get angry. You're just going to fix the problems that you can fix. You can't all come in. You start at 7 a.m. You get to bed at midnight because you need to do your edits after your shoot. So if it's a late race, it is. Well, because you shoot 2,000 shots the next day and they all need it almost instantly, but you care for your images. So you want to edit them. So no one's going to see them until I've been through them. All those kind of things. It's a lot to manage. And then on day four, the last day, we were all finished. We edited because then everything's done, but you're still editing for 4 hours. So everyone's going home, but not the media office. It's still going. And to get around with 10 photographers, we had two golf buggies and four little motorbikes for the guys that need to be on the track. And honestly, we were so sleep deprived. It took us 2 hours because we had six vehicles and five people. And we could not work out how to return all the vehicles and get everyone back to the car. It took 2 hours of us just scooting around, laughing and crying at the same time, knowing.
Deliriously tired, but you know, no logic, just, you know, well.
And we all were like that. So it's not like no one would be able to then start to get angry because we've all done the same thing. And that's what I love about it is working in a team and we're all just work hard and put an incredible archive of images together.
Di and I obviously, well, Di more so than myself, work events. I've worked events in my early years of studying at university and I've been to many big events, but we're so familiar with this exhaustion and just the drive and the energy that you have to put in to just keep going when you're exhausted. You're exhausted, but it's also exhilarating. I've worked music festivals and you get to the end of the music festival and the headline act is on stage, you're standing side stage watching them and you just want to collapse, but it is the most wonderful feeling. Wonderful feeling at the end of the day.
Yeah. And I don't want to do it every month because that will kill me. But it's a good thing to do because you know how much you can physically handle. And that's why, especially for an event like F1, it's an amazing event. It's incredible to see what's involved, the security, the cleaning, the running, the everything, all the zones, all the fan zones, all. It's incredible to the size of an event and then also working in a quite dangerous sport. Still, everything is under control Everything, everyone's doing their best job. And that energy when you're in that, even though you're exhausted, it's awesome.
Yeah. I remember working on my very first World Rally Championship event, Rally Australia, as the media PR manager. And we got to the end of the event, we'd had the final press conference, the transcript was done, the media release was distributed, and I gave everything to that event. That was a 4-day event, so that was massive. And I had to go to a sponsor function and smile at sponsors. And I got to my hotel room to get changed and I just cried. I was like, I just can't give anything more to anybody else, but I put my big girl pants on and got on with it and did. And then we had a party afterwards, which was really super fun. And I don't know where I found the energy for that, but you just do.
You can do so much more mentally. You can do so much more that you think you might not be able to. There was one other photographer there that was joined up later on, and he was very inexperienced, and I got lots of text messages of him going, I need to go to deck at 9, which is turn 9, and you can't, there's no transport, there's nothing. And like, can I get the golf buggy? Like, yeah, you've got to walk. There's no other way. No, but it's got all this gear. It's like, yeah, I know, I was there yesterday. I walked. You just go, you look at it going, these are my options. Instead of getting stressed out and angry or frustrated, you just grab your gear, you walk, and after 20, 25 minutes, you're there, and then you don't have to move anymore. Well, you have to bring all your gear, though. Don't leave, because he left some gear. Anyway, it can get really nasty really quick if you don't think ahead. So I bring all my stuff, my computer, everything. So once the race is done, I can sit down, and everyone's partying around me, and it's going off, and I'm just editing, getting the first images out. And then after the half hour, an hour, then I'll go to the media center and do the bulk of the work. But
got to get the job done. Within the Formula One world, what would your dream gig be? Is there a particular photography role that you really want to fill, or a particular destination? Like, do you want to stand on side track and shoot the cars coming past? Or
all of that is amazing. I've done a lot of that at the safari, and I fine tuned all the techniques, and Formula One goes a bit faster. I think what my dream job would be is following a year of all the women that are starting now in the academy. I would love to focus on them, and hopefully someone's not going to steal this idea. No, it doesn't matter. But that's what I would want to do. Just follow them getting into the sports and getting better and traveling around and what life is like for them. I mean, the guys are absolutely amazing, but they're getting so much already.
Yeah, they've got the coverage. Yeah, Susie Wolf, if you're listening, and wouldn't that be amazing if she was, my God. But if she's listening, here's your future photographer for the academy.
Flix might be on it already, but that's what I love. It's the story, or just following the chefs around. I know it sounds boring, but there's so much stuff going on the action already that everyone wants to do. And there's so many photographers in there. I would love that. And I think as a female photographer, I could get real close and confidence from them, because from the whole team of 9 photographers, I was the only woman in there.
Let's fix that.
Yeah, it will happen slowly. When I did all the adventure racing, I was the only one for a very long time, and no one wanted to collaborate with me because they thought I would be a danger or slowing them down. But the things that I experienced there is, like, you have to be creative, and if things are harder, or you're not the same as a man, I can carry gear, but there's a limit to it. So you just be clever. You don't need all the big gear. You don't need the expensive stuff. You just need connection with people.
It's interesting that you mentioned following the chefs around. It sounds boring. We did an interview with Jason Best, who was a chef for the Mercedes AMG F1 team. And it was fascinating, because as you were saying, there's so much that goes into these races. It's not a small feat putting this thing together. So speaking to people like Jason and getting this kind of behind the scenes look into a very, very fundamental part of the event is so fascinating. So to see that visually as well.
Yeah.
Of course, it's going to be interesting. You know, there's probably so many things that happen that people just do not ever think about or realize.
No, and that's another privilege on being in events like this, is seeing everything, seeing how much is involved with this race in Abu Dhabi. I'm sure the Dutch race, and which it will be the, hopefully not, but it sounds like it's the last one, the one in the Netherlands this year. It's such a smaller scale. I mean, people go there on their bicycles. There's no parking.
So Dutch.
It doesn't have massive advertisers and sponsors behind it. That's why it can't continue, which is very, very, very sad. And it's a very different type of race, I feel, really for the fan and not for the sponsors and for the advertisers.
Yeah, I remember being at the Monaco Grand Prix 10 years ago, and our grandstand seat was opposite the marina, and we were just watching all of these hosted, invited, super rich people on these boats that are worth 3 times my house and more, probably, just sitting there chatting and not even watching the race, not even paying attention to what was going on the track. To me, it felt like a waste.
The same thing happened at the Australian Grand Prix. I remember distinctly one of our fellow colleagues, Di, in the travel writing world, has wonderful connections with the airline sponsor. And I remember sitting in my seat and waving at them in the VIP section, and they were messaging me and they're like, I have no idea what F1 is. It's fast cars. I mean, it looks cool, but I was so upset.
Oh my God, I'd give my right arm for that ticket to be there and have that access.
I sat there from morning till afternoon for 3 days watching the Formula 3, the Formula 2, the Formula 1, every single thing. And there's all these sponsors that are inviting people along just because it kind of hurts as fans. And you can tell when the events, they've gone a little bit too far and do not think about the fans, i.e. Vegas.
Yeah.
No one can afford to go to Vegas.
Yeah. And also remember the first year of the track at Vegas in practice, it ruined Carlos Sainz's car. Was it practice?
Yeah, he went over the pothole.
Yeah, the manhole, and it just wrecked the Ferrari. Get the fundamentals right. It's about the race, and then all the other showbiz glitz and glamour can look, it's got a place. It definitely, you can't have a race in Vegas without that, but without a track, you got nothing. Yeah, so.
I know. And that's why, like you were asking earlier, that's why I was thinking, would you recommend people to spend the money? You are sitting at the best, some of the best spots. So you can see you're at the exciting bits. But I think for the real experience, and if you're a real fan, I think sitting in the grandstands with everyone else with your plastic cup or whatever you're drinking instead of your, you know,
yeah, I think, wearing your orange shirt, wearing,
and that's
yeah.
what you see with the pictures as well. If you see the races in Mexico, where it's like crazy ambience around, and if you see the shots from the normal seated area, you see how much people are loving it and just partying. And you know, VIP areas are slightly different.
You've been following Formula One for a really long time. You're Dutch. So tell us who your favourite team is and who your favourite driver is. And would you always follow the team of a particular driver?
Oh, gosh. It would be Red Bull because I'm Dutch and because Max is there. But it's not just about Max, but then it is. You know, his dad was a very, very, very loved, famous Formula One talent back when I was growing up. So it's beautiful to see father and son in there. I love that whole time when he was getting there and getting his first win. That was so exciting. But I just overall love Formula One and the passion behind it, and what it is, what we haven't spoken about is what I love about it. You've got your driver and he's doing an amazing thing, but there's so much and a huge team behind them.
Yeah.
That everything depends on them. And I love it when they come over the finish line and, you know, are excited when they have a win but they always thank their team and the connection with the team. I find that you don't really see that in any others, dare say. It's that real genuine feeling of being a team, even though it's one person that's visually driving or competing, and the whole team is celebrated. And if someone makes a mistake, then it costs him. It costs everyone. When you have a bad pit stop, it's hurting everyone.
Fun fact, Jos Verstappen had a bigger fan club than Michael Schumacher. This is true.
Wow, I didn't know that.
I remember that from my first PR job. He was a god in the Netherlands. Sabine, we're going to go to the final three now. Three questions that we like to ask all of our guests when they come on the podcast. So with your F1 fan hat on, without your photographer's hat on, if you could go to any Grand Prix on the calendar, which one would you go to?
Monaco, I think.
Yeah.
I've been there it sounds very snobbish, but as a kid, I grew up in Europe. So I was there with my dad when we were camping, and exploring Monaco on its own without the race being there was amazing. All the normal shops are underground, so only the luxury things are above ground. And I remember walking or driving with my dad on a little bit of a track. And my dad was already in Formula One and it was on my radar. I wasn't a fan the second so little. But yeah, that always made me a huge impression trying to visualize cars in that area. And I've seen it on TV so many times, but that would be definitely one that would want to see.
Good decision. Yeah. Good choice.
We've spoken about the Monaco GP a few times actually, because I've been to Monaco twice as well. I think it's just a very iconic race and a very interesting destination. As you say, there are actually shops that you might be able to afford to shop in if you've just got to go looking for them, because it's a very interesting place.
And beautiful. So beautiful. Okay, Sabine, if you could holiday with any F1 driver, dead or alive, who would it be and why?
That's such a hard one. Maybe with Max, because we can talk Dutch, and because I'm Dutch and all that kind of stuff. But really historically, and it's not the Formula One race driver as far as I know, but I would love to spend some time with Enzo Ferrari back in the 50s and 60s.
Wow. Have you seen the movie, Ferrari movie?
Yeah. My dad was in old timers and cars and all that kind of stuff. So that's always close to my heart. I'm taken with the racing back then because it was so raw. I love technology. It's where we are and that's the future. But the old Ferraris on the street tracks, it's like, oh my God.
But Enzo Ferrari, I mean, he comes across, especially in the film and the other docos that I've seen, as a very tough, not very soft, not very likable man. So he's who you want to spend time with.
I'd say so, because a lot of people say that quickly about people. But I know from experiences photographing or working with people that I like that are amazing people from the inside. You need to work a bit harder to get closer. I'm not saying that I would have been able to, but I know lots of people say that about Max as well, that he's a bit more colder and distant. But it's also the Dutch culture, and if you give people time, you know, those people are interesting. Those people will have stories to tell you and places to show you, I find, than the people that are more extrovert or easygoing. I'm not saying they don't have stories, but it's like, that's what intrigues me. I'd like to work hard for experiences. And
you like peeling back the layers.
Yeah.
And being able to break that down feels very rewarding too, right? To win their trust. Speaking about Max, I don't think he's a cold person at all. Look at the way that he is with his stepdaughter. Mm-hmm. He is so caring and gentle. And from the Max that you see on the racetrack to that, it's so polarizing.
It's two different people, yeah.
Yeah. It's two different people, but it's two different jobs, two very different jobs. He's a racer and he's focused on that. And then he's also a loving stepfather.
I've heard he's really playful and that he makes a lot of jokes and he's really playful in real life. Like, not in real life, but away from racing.
And that's what happens, right? When people are really excelling and achieving a lot, then with the media, which I'm part of, the negativity will start streaming in.
Yeah, for sure.
So I'm always feeling very protective for my Dutchies, you know.
Well, you've got to follow your hometown hero, haven't you?
So final question, if you were to cook any Formula One themed meal from any of the countries that Formula One visits, what would you choose and why?
Oh my gosh, That's another tough one. I think it has to be Italian. I'm familiar with a lot of different kitchens because I've got my Asian background, but I think Formula One and racing in Italy for me. I'm sure I'm pleasing you guys. I mean, I probably will go into the more unknown, like not the classics, not the pastas and the pizzas, but more antipasta and a few more interesting vegetables. Anyway, everything's delicious in Italian food. So.
Quite right.
Agreed.
Quite right. And it's so varied, which makes it one of my favorite cuisines. Oh, I'm so biased, but it is so varied. It's not just pizza and pasta, but, you know, there's all the delicious cured meats and all the pickled vegetables and so many vegetable dishes and different salads. And then you got the rice dishes and it's all seasonal and it's all regional as well. I could bang on and on about Italian food.
Yeah, I feel Formula One is boisterous and it's celebrities and, you know, you need that kind of Italian vibe around it just to go all out. And, you know, I love Asian and Japanese cuisine, but it's almost too delicate for the F1.
Thank you so much for joining us, Sabine, and thank you guys for listening. If you enjoy our podcast, please, please, please leave a comment, rate us. It really, really helps us get in front of more eyes and into more ears. We also love listener feedback, so you can engage with us on Instagram, YouTube, LinkedIn, TikTok. Just search for And Away We Go F1 Podcast and you will find us. You can also send us an email at andawaywego F1podcast@gmail.com.
Thank you, Mon. And thank you so much for joining us, Sabine. It's been an absolute pleasure to hear about your life behind the lens and photographing your first Grand Prix at Abu Dhabi. We really appreciate your time. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Until next week and until lights out.
It's lights out and away we go.
And Away We Go podcast is produced by Diane Bortoletto and Monique Ciccato. Let's do it.